Translation. The original Bhakta avatar... Oh, I thought you were traveling. The original Bhakta avatar is Sankarshan. Sri Advaita is counted among such incarnations. Please repeat. The original Bhakta avatar is Sankarshan. Sri Advaita is counted among such incarnations. Purport. Although Sri Advaita Prabhu belongs to the Vishnu category, he displays servitorship to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as one of his associates. When Lord Vishnu appears as a servitor, he is called an incarnation of a devotee of Lord Krishna. Sri Sankarshan, who is an incarnation of Vishnu in the spiritual sky, known as the Greater Vaikuntha, is the chief of the quadruple incarnations and is the original incarnation of a devotee. Lord Mahavishnu, who is lying on the causal ocean, is a manifestation of Sankarshan. He is the original personality of Godhead, who glances over the material and efficient causes of the cosmic manifestation. Advaita Prabhu is accepted as an incarnation of Mahavishnu. All the plenary manifestations of Sankarshan are indirect expansions of Lord Krishna. That consideration also makes Advaita Prabhu an eternal servitor of Gaura Krishna. Therefore, he is accepted as a devotee incarnation. Oma jnana timinandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshur ummilitam jena tasmai shi gurave namaha. Nama om Vishnu padaya Krishna preshtaya bhutale shimate bhakti vedanta swaminiti namane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nidavishesha Shunyavadi Pashtatya Deshatane. So what a great thing it is to have the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the authoritative voice not only of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the six Goswamis, Murari Gupta's diaries, Swarup Damodar's diaries, recorded conversations from Ramananda Roy, all put together in one book, then with the commentaries of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Prabaha Vasya, then with the razor-sharp intellect of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami, and then A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, founder Acharya of the entire planetary movement known as ISKCON, the like of which has never before seen except in the days of the Roman Empire, said one scholar. And we have this book, and we can read it. And do we read it? That is the question. These books used to be distributed. Shiva Ramaswamy used to distribute this book in an airport. You don't get many into your book bag. But it was so exciting to distribute these in 1975. Take one, we're just giving them a huge, huge big thing. The Prabhupada was very happy to see that there wasn't much of a distance between his dictation, the publishing, printing, publishing, and the distribution of his Chaitanya Charitamrita. The first time this particular Adi Leela was here in this temple in 1975. It was the very first copy that had come in the post from the Los Angeles BBT, and it was immediately stolen by the temple president, who at that time was a brahmachari, as they do, these brahmachari thieves. And he took it into the room, which is now your library, where we have all the flip-down desks where you have the... So it's in that room that the Chaitanya Charitamrita first appeared in this country. Not all of it, but the Adi Leela. And he sat in the corner by the window and was just reading it. And I came in after he started reading and I said, "Can I have a read?" He said, "No." "You go and distribute books. That's what Prabhupada wants you to do. Let the senior devotees read the books." Huh? "The name shall be not revealed." we have a wonderful introduction here to Advaita Acharya. I think I should read to the end of the chapter, actually. Otherwise the next person after me has to do a lot. Advaita Acharya Gosai, Mahima Apar, Yanhara Hunkari Kaila Chaitanya Patar. Please listen carefully. The glories of Sri Advaita Acharya are boundless, for his sincere vibrations brought about Lord Chaitanya's descent upon this earth. Sankirtana Pracharya Sabha Jagatarila Advaita Prasadi Loka Premadhana Paila. He liberated the universe by preaching Sankirtan. Thus the people of the world received the treasure of love of Godhead through the mercy of Advaita. Advaita Mahima Ananta Kepari Kahite Selikiye Shuni Mahajana Haite. Who can describe the unlimited glories of Advaita Acharya? I write here as much as I have known from great authorities. Acharya Charane Mora Koti Namaskar Ite Kichu Aparadana Labe Amar. I offer my obeisances 10 million times to the lotus feet of Sri Advaita Acharya. Please do not take offense at this. Tumara Mahima Koti Samudra Agad Tahara Iyata Kahi E Bada Aparad. Your glories are as fathomless as millions of oceans and seas. Speaking of its measure is a great offense indeed. Jai 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 Sri Advaita Acharya. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Nityananda Arya. It's nice, isn't it? You should learn that for Sankirtan. All glories to Advaita Acharya. All glories to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Superior Lord Nityananda. So Kirtan leaders can take these verses, you can sing them sometimes. Dvi shloki kahila advaita tattva nirupana pancha tattvera vichar kichushuna bhaktagana. Thus in two verses I have described the truth concerning Advaita Acharya. Now, O devotees, please hear about the five truths. Pancha tattva. Shri Rupa Raghunatha Pade Yara Ash Chaitanya Charitamrita Kahi Krishna Das. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishnadas, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. That is the end of chapter 6 of the Adi Leela. So, Hare Krishna. The notion, the understanding of the Chatur Vyuha, Vasudev Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Ariruddha, this notion is as old as Vedic literature itself. You will find Chaturvyuha described in Mahabharata. You will find it in the Lakshmi Tantra, which is older. You will find in the Pancharatra Samhita, you'll find Chaturvyuha. So remember the last class I gave here, which is all about backdating what we say we believe to the antecedent Shastra. Although Chaitanya Charitamrita is sufficient in itself for the prosecution of the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, absolutely sufficient in and of itself. However, if you wish to convince someone else, they may not accept Chaitanya Charitamrita because it was written in the time of Shakespeare. They may say, well, is that as old as your religion is? And of course, the devotees of Krishna, we like to say, no, the religion of Krishna consciousness goes back to the Vedas. And then they will say, oh really? Which part of the Vedas? And then you have to be able to cough up some verses to prove the great antiquity of the path that you're following. So the Chaturvyuha is found in the Pancharatra Samhita. And when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sat down with Sanatan Goswami, he said, I want you to write a book. And I want you to write a book of the theology practice of the devotees of the Vaishnavas according to my teachings. So therefore he said, he gave him a list of things to include, a list of philosophical topics to include, and one of them was of course the Chaturvyuha. Now in our movement we don't really kind of do the Chaturvyuha very much. We kind of skip out the Chaturvyuha except in certain purports where we discover Aniruddha and the mind and the control of Sankarshan and the identity of Balaram. But we don't, there's 24 manifestations of the different Vishnus. But how much do they feature in our life? When we put on tilak, we're reciting the names of the Chaturvyuha and Sankarshan's expansions. That's nice. Where else do we use? When we do Achman, Keshavayanam, Narayanayanam, Madhavayanam, okay, that's Achman. But if you want to do Vishesh Achman, the long Achman, then you go through all 24 names. Okay. Where else does the Chaturvyuha? Do we worship the Chaturvyuha? See? But another Vaishnava tradition is the Chaturvyuha. It's quite a big thing. First expansions from God and then secondary expansions from God. It's quite a big thing. But according to our teaching, Advaita Acharya is Sankarshan. So we worship in the form of Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Surupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam. It is more important for us in Kali Yuga how the Chaturvyuha and how the origins of the Chaturvyuha make their appearance in this world in order to manifest the religion for the age of Kali, which we follow. That's more important for us. We're not unique. The Krishna consciousness movement is not unique in having Bhakta avatar. This is a long-standing Vaishnava tradition. It goes way back to the Alwars, which are the antecedents of the the Ramanuja Sampradaya. And having dreams that an incarnation of the Lord is about to appear by the Lord appearing in the mind of the mother or the father, this is also quite a standard manifestation in Vaishnava circles. So it is not uncommon, this notion of having Bhakta avatar. Of course, when you're explaining to someone, you first have to define, it looks comfortable, but it's not actually comfortable. Not actually a nice chair to sit in. That's comfortable. Because it's sloping as well. It's not comfortable. So all glories to the designers, but I'd rather have a plastic chair. Where was I? Bhakta avatar. So the word avatar means avatarana, one who descends, one who comes down from a higher place to a lower place. Avatarana. And that's the notion that God can make his appearance. But then when you translate the word into English, it sort of dissolves, the meaning dissolves when you say incarnation. See, because in the same breath, we talk about Krishna's incarnation and we talk about our incarnation. Our reincarnation. If you have a reincarnation, then you must have had an incarnation. So we're all incarnations. Except that the Lord manifests in a wonderful way and we incarnate as Bob the Builder. And that's no glory to that, but we use the same word for both incarnations, reincarnation and incarnation. So immediately the paucity of the English language hits us. Incarna. In means in, it's a Latin word. Carna means of the flesh, as in carnal. So, because carna means blood. So incarna means takes on blood. Means that the soul enters into flesh, which is not exactly what we want to say when we say avatar. You see, we don't want to say that God becomes flesh, because then we get into all kinds of Christian understanding. And this was the difficulty of Christianity in the first few years. Was it God becoming flesh? Was it man becoming God? Was it God appearing as flesh but not really being flesh, so therefore how could he be crucified? And people got twisted up because they weren't quite sure. Jesus is an incarnation, okay, but what sort of incarnation? Because that's their word. The word incarnation is used within early Christianity. So it's a Christian word that we're trying to use for avatar, and it just doesn't work. But we don't have any more words in English. Sorry, we've run out of words. Unless ISKCON itself can redefine avatar So that when we say avatar, when the members of this movement say avatar, people know damn well what we mean. You see? But already they've stolen the word avatar and they've used it for something else. So we're already stuck. So when you're preaching, you have to first define the word, even before you use the word. It's like, I was invited, myself, Sitaram, and someone else, we were invited to go to a Japanese Buddhist monastery. And there was an English convert, and he said, oh, I'd just like to give you a little presentation of our philosophy. And so he was speaking for about 15 minutes. We couldn't understand a word. Because although he was an Englishman, he was using such Japanese terminology, legitimate terminology from their tradition, but we just couldn't understand. So it's the same when we open our mouths and we speak English, 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 Sanskrit, English, 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 Sanskrit. No one knows what we're talking about. They really don't know what we're talking about. You know, you think that they know what you and they think they know what you're saying, but both of you, and no one moves forward. You say, so Krishna, Lord Chaitanya is an incarnation of God who came to stop the reincarnation of human beings in this world. Okay, and you think that you've delivered a perfectly Krishna-conscious sentence. They don't have a clue what you're talking about. Because incarnation to them, they're just grappling with the idea of incarnation, which means taking birth again. So, hang on a minute, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took birth again? Well, you could say that, but it's not. So Lord Chaitanya reincarnates, and you reincarnate? So what's the difference between us and Lord Chaitanya? And what is this? Then we have to explain Bhakta Avatar. So he's incarnating not as God, you know, dancing on the hoods of Kaliya, straightening the back of Kubja, entering into Agasura, lifting Govardhan Hill, dancing the Rasa Leela and not getting caught. You see? That's an incarnation. But now he's appearing as someone who's no different from you. So how do we know that he was an incarnation at all? You see, this is very, so we have to be crystal clear in our own mind, first of all, because our own mind gets it wrong. Then when we're teaching and preaching, we also have to be very clear, otherwise you get it wrong. And you have to choose very carefully the words and the definitions of the words. So, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he's spending a long time, look at it all, look at it, he's spending a very long time, words and definitions of words, and he's just about to start on chapter 7, Lord Chaitanya and Five Features. Now, Prabhupada, he thought chapter 7 was so important, so vitally important, that he translated it before anything else, put it into a book before anything else, and I was out on the street distributing that book in 74, must have been late 74, before Chaitanya Charitamrita was appeared. It was very exciting getting the books just after Prabhupada had translated them. It was very exciting to know that you were the first person in the Western world to distribute these books. Of course, that was probably not true, but in our little heads at the time, we could think that. You know, no one in Los Angeles has got this book. They're not distributing them. Right now, at this time in LA, we're the only ones, because LA is asleep, so we've got the books. And especially when we distributed Nectar of Instruction, because I think we knew that Los Angeles didn't have that book, so we went out. And what happened with Nectar of Instruction is that we distributed it Sunday mornings here at Bhaktivedanta Manor were box packing sessions. So the person would be giving the Bhagavatam class in those days, or the Chaitanya Charitamrita class, as it was a little later, and the entire room would be packing boxes. Cardboard boxes, and inside the box would go three books, Ishopanishad, Nectar of Instruction, and Perfection of Yoga, which we had put different colored covers on. So Ishopanishad was a purple cover, Perfection of Yoga was a maroon cover, and Nectar of Instruction was a sort of silvery gray cover. And we redesigned it, and we knew that we were the only people in the world here in the British Yatra, because upstairs, in what's now the wedding office, and the Treasury was our BBT department. Yes, England was allowed to have its own BBT. Hooray! So when Balaram or Sankarshan was carrying his plow, that was a P-L-O-U-G-H, not a P-L-O-W. Because according to us, according to the gospel, the King James version of Prabhupada's books, Balaram carries a P-L-O-U-G-H. The Americans could never understand that. They said, you guys and your spelling, what's that, pluff? Lord Balaram carries a pluff? We say, no, Lord Balaram carries a plow, and that's how you spell it, because English is English. So we fought for our own BBT. So we had our BBT up in now is what's the Treasury. And the Treasury was originally in what's now, you know, where Yogi and Ananta Purushottam have their computers. And Navadvip Chandra does things with cameras. We would pack these boxes, and then this whole box set was called The Art of Living. Get that? You see, that was our idea. Not Sri Sri's idea. The Art of Living. And we would distribute these as a big book. And we got the Los Angeles BBT to credit it as a big book, because it was three books in one, so we got full points for it, you see. So that was how we used to do it. Jai Shishu Radha Gokul Ananda. Why am I telling you these things? Just for local knowledge. So we have to have definitions. But I was saying that it's nice to distribute these books. I had the greatest Sankirtan experience of my life after distributing the Nectar of Instruction all day. We thought that we would go out on the streets really early before anybody had appeared, you know, as you do. So I think 6 o'clock in the morning we were out. It was Liverpool. It was in Liverpool. And by the end of the day, those who distribute books will know about this, but by the end of the day, literally our feet were not touching the ground. Our eyes were wet with tears. Our hairs were standing on end. This is the result, folks, if you distribute these books. It's true, isn't it? You book distributors? There's more I could tell you, but I do not wish to. Okay, so Advaita Acharya, I put down some things about Advaita Acharya because he is such an important person, being Sankarshan and Bhakta Avatar. Now, I didn't know that Sutapa was going to be here, and I feel a bit shy because Sutapa, he's gone to all these places just recently. So very fresh in his mind is all the pastimes of Advaita Acharya. Am I right? Yes, like this, which means... but don't ask me about it. Here's the difficulty. Advaita Acharya had a disciple called Ishanagar. Ishanagar, we find, is the author of a book called Advaita Prakash. So a disciple writes a book about his spiritual master. Do you believe it or not? Yeah, you should believe it. Okay. So now you can find a book written by Ishanagar about his spiritual master, Sri Advaita Acharya. It's full of wonderful stories about Advaita Acharya. Okay? Seems easy, doesn't it? However, we get to the 1930s, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati thoroughly condemns that book, explaining that it's not actually written by Ishanagar, but it's written by someone else, 70, 80, 100 years earlier, who has then put the name of one of Advaita Acharya's disciples, you know, leading disciple, on the book, himself remaining anonymous. So it was not uncommon for this to be done. Someone to write a book and then to backdate it. Okay, to backdate it so that it appears authoritative. Difficult, isn't it? Because then an ISKCON devotee found that book, translated it, published it, and it's now selling in Loy Bazaar. And of course, as you know, anything that sells, any book that sells in Loy Bazaar eventually gets sold at Bhaktivedanta Manor. Why? Because if it's on the shelves at Bhaktivedanta Manor, A, it can make money for the temple shop department, and B, people think that it's authoritative. So for a number of years, we've sold Advaita Prakash. You know, perhaps knowingly, perhaps unknowingly. Okay? But I just want to say that. Be aware. So now, who bases their book? Some other people base their books and their classes on Advaita Prakash. So I'm faced with a dilemma. I've got to look at certain things and I've got to say, what will I teach to the devotees today? Not that you need teaching. I'm not here to teach you. I'm just here to give you some entertainment on a Sunday. But do we choose some stories that have appeared in other books about the Panchatattva by other ISKCON authors, or do we choose not to include them? Well, we have to check our sources, you see. Because just because it's written in a book doesn't mean it's true. Just because it's written in a book that's sold at Bhaktivedanta Manor doesn't mean it's true. We have to check. You just came in, so you don't know about this. Okay. There's the perils of coming into a movie halfway through. You don't know who's who. Perils of coming into a class halfway through. You don't know what he's talking about. He's just said that not all the books at Bhaktivedanta Manor are true. Okay. But I'm not going to go and backdate it because you came in late. You can ask someone. So here we have a bit of a problem. So in my infinite wisdom, I've chosen some stories to share with you which appear to be backed up by Srila Prabhupada or by authoritative sources. And I apologize in advance if that is not true, but I haven't strayed too far, actually. So Advaita Acharya has a very interesting story. Now, if you don't know him, he's usually depicted, although at one time, of course, he was shaven, with a shaven head, and he was young. He comes into the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was 54 when Lord Chaitanya was born. So that means that by the time this photograph was taken, and by photograph I don't mean photograph, I mean painting, this is when we sort of freeze frame Panchatattva at a certain point in the history. This Panchatattva is usually depicted in the courtyard of Srivas Thakur. Now, the courtyard of the Angan of Srivas was not actually, black and white tiles, but that is something that the artist has depicted. And I don't think there were any curtains there at the time, but there might have been arches. You can go today to Srivas Angan, or the reconstruction of Srivas Angan, and it is still a wonderful, beautiful place to be, because in that place the Sankirtan movement was born. And, of course, by that time, Advaita Acharya was much older, so you have to, 22 years after he was 54, so he's, 70, 76 or something like that. So he's depicted in this way. There were arguments. Originally, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur argued or described in his commentary on Chaitanya Bhagavat, he described Advaita Acharya as shaven-headed. So sometimes there is another little controversy in ISKCON about how he should be depicted. But since Srila Prabhupada, when he was a child, got to play the part of Advaita Acharya in plays, the young Abhay was with a long white wig and a white beard. So since Prabhupada got to play Advaita Acharya, we shall not question. And Advaita Acharya, as given to us, is depicted in this way. And the commentators have said that, and that's fine. So, his father was known as Kuvera Pandit, and he was the son of someone known as Nrisinga Raja. And his father was born in 1410. And Kuvera Pandit was married to Labha Devi or Nabha Devi. And they lived in a part of now Bangladesh called the Srihatta district. You know that, Chachi? The Srihatta district? The village was known as Lauda. And there was, originally Nrisinga Raja was born in Shantipur. So that's a connection. Later on, he went to Shantipur because he was a little bit distressed. He was a little bit distressed because he had six sons. Two of them became householders, and four of them became sannyasis. This is quite distressing. Quite distressing for a householder when four of your sons take sannyas. I mean, is it something that I ate? Is it something in the water? So he was a little distressed. Actually, he was quite proud. But he was the advisor to the local king, the courtly advisor to King Divyasingha. Divyasingha, of course, as the name suggests, a lot of kings were named Divyasingha or Narasingha or Jaisingha or Rajasingha. You know, the Kshatriya race, they like to be lions. So even if they weren't called, you know, a lion name, when they became king, they became, you know, Divyasingha. So a transcendental lion, that's, you know, who's that? That's Lord Nrsingadev. So the king often, you know, he became named after Lord Nrsingadev, you know, who's Vishnu, but he's also ferocious. And it was a name that meant, don't mess with me. Okay? It was a name that was meant to strike fear into the Islamic oppressors. But unfortunately, there were many Singhas, Divyasinghas and Jaisinghas that were unable to defeat the Muslims. But that's another story. So because Nrsingaraja, the father of Advaitacharya, came originally from Shantipur and was then, you see, Brahmins would move. You see, Brahmins would move. They would leave the village in which they were born and they would go to find work. It's not that, you know, a Brahmin was born in a village and then stayed there just sort of ringing bells and waving incense and hoping that someone would come along and give donations. That's not quite the way it works. Just like our devotees, they don't stay at Bhaktivedanta Manor and sell books. They travel. They go everywhere. So in this business of giving Krishna consciousness to others, you travel so that you can find patrons. And by this I mean patrons, as in kings, you know. So it's very good if you know all six branches of Vedic philosophy and you know how to apply them in daily life. It's very good. A king will find you very useful. See, because Brahmin doesn't just mean that you know how to tell stories of Krishna dancing on Kaliya. Brahmin means that you can actually get to grips in management meetings. So you're invited into a management meeting where all the Kshatriyas are sitting around and they come to a point of law. And then they turn to the Brahmin and they say, how should the law be applied in this way? So some Brahmins were like lawyers and some Brahmins were like priests. So you'd call in your different Brahmins and they would give you advice from Shastra. I say Brahmins were like lawyers, but they didn't do that work. That's more Kshatriya, you see. Those are Brahmins. Brahmins taught things, but they didn't necessarily do them. For instance, you could teach the skills of a Kshatriya and be able to, be able to really fight in war. But because you're a Brahmin, you teach it, you don't do it, you see. You're not allowed to do it. So therefore, Brahmins taught everything. So we would find a Brahmin teaching plumbing. And at the big universities, for instance, Takshashila, that is in modern-day Pakistan now, Takshashila had schools that were seven stories high, buildings that were seven stories high. And they had something like 20, 30,000 students. So it was as big as Cambridge is today. So there was Takshashila, there was Varanasi, and then there was Navadvip. And then there was some other places that I forget. But these were very big places. And if you knew something particularly, you went there and you taught it. But you would teach along with what we would call in our day transcendental subjects. You taught also so-called mundane subjects. Because if you don't teach mundane subjects, how are people going to make a living? And if people don't make a living, how the society collapses. You see? So a Brahmin would teach accounting. A Brahmin would teach banking. But along with teaching banking, he would also teach ethics. Along with teaching how to be a Kshatriya, he would also teach ethics. How to be a Kshatriya according to Dharma. And therefore, sometimes when principles of Dharma were called into play, the Brahmins would be consulted. So that's why a king always needed Brahmins around him. Very important Brahmins, but they had to really know stuff. This is the point. Brahmins know stuff. And they can remember stuff. So if you've got a piece of cotton thread around your shoulders, or ladies, you chant the Gayatri Mantra, it means you must know stuff. And you must read stuff. And you must keep refreshing your memory in order to know more and more stuff. And teach more and more stuff. That's what Brahmins do. So here's Nrisimha Raja. He's teaching. And he probably taught his sons far too well, because four of them went off to take sannyas. So he's talking to his wife, probably saying, Where did it all go wrong, baby? Where did it all go wrong? Four sons, they've all taken sannyas. So he went with his wife to Shantipur to do tapasya. He went to do tapasya. He took a vow of silence. And his wife had a dream. And in the dream, she had the dream that Vishnu himself would take birth as her child. So they were very happy. Shortly after, they returned to Lauda in what is now Bangladesh. She became pregnant, and that son was born, and his name was Kamalaksha. Kamalaksha, one who has eyes like lotus petals. Now, different people say different things about where the name Advaita came from. Some people say that he was called that because you have an upfront name and a private name, according to Hindu culture. So you get a name that no one calls you, and a name that everybody calls you. And only the parents know the private name. So some people say he was given the name Advaita very early on. Some people say it was when he was initiated by Shantacharya, who taught him the six Vedic philosophies. Some people say that he got the name when he met Madhavendra Puri. We don't know. I don't know. Someone may know, but I don't know that person, so I can't tell you. So, in January or February in 1434, Advaita Acharya appeared. So Sankarshan appears on this earth, and as you know, Sankarshan always appears, Balaram always appears, in order to presage the appearance of the Lord himself, because the function of Sankarshan is always to take the servitor position. So even when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes as the servitor of Godhead, the servitor of the servitor Godhead takes his role as well. So here's Advaita Acharya, rather Kamalaksha, taking his birth. Then we have his childhood. We have a ceremony in this part of Bangladesh known as Varuni Snan. And there was one time during childhood, so the story goes, and I've just mentioned that some of these stories are unorthodox and some aren't. This is one story that I do not know the origins of. But because there is a festival still going on which commemorates this, we should know that, you know, that perhaps there's some authenticity to the story. But Kamalaksha went with his mother to a hill. She wanted to take a bath in this March-April festival called Varuni Snan. And at that point, the holy rivers came. And he was able to point out, he said, "Mother, here is the red Saraswati. Here is the white Ganga, here is the black Yamuna, and let us take bath." That story is there, and still celebrated at the time of Varuni Snan. It is said that because Nrisimha Raja was the confidential advisor to the king, kings are always having sons. When I was a youngster, I used to read about these kings and all the sons that they had, and I used to think, how can one man have so many children? Until in the prasadam room, one devotee told me that he had 63 siblings and that his father had been a king in Africa. "Oh my God," she says, "oh my God, 63. So 64 children. And wait till you hear the end of the story. The story is that they were all girls. They were all girls. And he had 63 different wives. They were all girls. So he kept on marrying these different ladies. And then he had a son. And then his son joined the Hare Krishna movement. He said, "You know, I broke my father's heart. But I am so happy." It was from Africa. That was my African accent. I'm half African, I can do it. There's a very, if you ever hear this story, there is some transaction between the young Kamalaksha, who was to become Advaita Acharya, and the son of the king, Divyasingha, and that he became angry because the king was a Durga worshipper. Now, you know, one story has it that the statue of Durga in the temple exploded, and the king saw this and then fell to his knees, and, you know, the child put his foot on his head, and there is that story. It's an account. But anyway, what we do know is that the king eventually, much later, did actually become a disciple and was known as Krishna Das, just so that you know that. So then the family went to Shantipur, and there was a place called Purnavati, no? Anyway, there was one great acharya there known as Shantacharya, and he taught the young Kamalaksha the six philosophical systems. Of course, he became very accomplished very quickly. Why? Because he's Vedantavit, Vedakrit. He knows everything. Then came a significant event. The parents passed away. They were aged 80. And so Advaita went on a pilgrimage. And this is interesting because he went on pilgrimage all over India. First of all, this is very good actually, if no one's ever been on pilgrimage, and by which I mean not flying to Delhi, getting a breakneck speed taxi to Delhi, to Vrindavan, staying in Vrindavan and socializing for 4 days solid, hearing about all the problems of ISKCON for another 2 days solid, staying in MVT and eating in the restaurant and eating ice cream. Folks, that's not pilgrimage. That's all, we're all going on a summer holiday with Cliff Richard. That's not, you know, pilgrimage means, you know, let's rough it a bit. I took one man who manages manages a branch of Asda. He has a supermarket the size of a supermarket the size of a football field. I took him to Vrindavan for the first time, and he'd heard about, you know, his head was full of, you know, Mother Teresa of Calcutta and the poverty in India and everything like this, you know, and he expected to see poverty, so that's what he saw. So we saw some people in tents on the other side of the road, barefooted, simply dressed, queuing for water. And his eyes just filled with tears, and the tears were dripping. It was his first day, bless him. It was his first day in India. And I said, what's up, Andrew? And he said, "The poverty, Kripa Moya, the poverty here in India." I said, "Oh, well, you mean these people?" I said, "They're all hedge fund dealers from Bombay. And they've come here, they're big business people from Bombay, and they've come here on an annual pilgrimage. And they have no shoes because they do that for 3 days. But, you know, after the 3 days is finished, they go back to wearing Italian handmade shoes." And then he sort of dried his eyes. I said, "If you want to see Vrindavan, talk to me and I'll explain things as we go around." I said, "But you wanted to see poverty and that's what you saw. But these people they're doing pilgrimage because that's what you do when you come to Vrindavan." So the point is to do Vrindavan in the right way and to rough it a little bit. And if you rough it, you actually come close to the real Vrindavan. Unfortunately, it's a great shame that sometimes we don't. So anyway, he went and he saw in Remuna, he saw Gopinath, Shirachar Gopinath. Then he went to Puri, and then he went to Kanchipuram. Shiva Kanchi, Vishnu Kanchi. See, because if you're doing a tour of India, you go to all these different places. And all these different places, it's not like it is today. Careful, Creeper Moya, you're treading on thin ice. It wasn't that Vaishnavs from different sampradayas would avoid each other. That's what I'm saying. Vaishnavs from different sampradayas would learn from each other. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the first person to translate the Artha Panchakam, which is a Sri Vaishnava text, into Bengali. He was the first person to translate it into Bengali. And he said, here is the essence of the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Wow. Do you know what Kripa Moya said in class today? I was doing my head in. So the point is that, yes, we have some additional points. Yes, we have some refinements. But there's a lot that we can learn. So one time, for instance, there was a great debate between an impersonalist and a follower of the Madhva school. So just like in football today, just like we have our big Euro matches, which we always lose, being England. see, what they should do is really raise the crossbar a little bit, and then we would win, you see. But anyway, the point is that you always have a referee who's from a country that's not from the either of the teams. See, if you have Italy versus England, you have a German referee, because then they won't take sides. So this was a Madhva sannyasi and a Shankara sannyasi. Who are you going to call in as a referee in the debate? And these debates were very, very serious. You could lose everything at these debates. It wasn't just like, oh, let's have a conversation, and it might be a heated conversation, then we'll all go home. You could actually lose everything. If your Sanskrit wasn't pukkha enough and your arguments weren't pukkha enough, God help us if us had to get into debates with people. It's good to practice on yourselves. If you see a Buddhist school in the afternoon after they've done all their prayers and everything, you'll see them debating with each other. And you'll see, it's fun actually, you see them, two monks sitting together, and one monk will be going like this, and another monk will be going like this, and another monk will be going. He won't hit the monk, but they'll be so passionate in their argumentation. But they're arguing over very fine points of Sanskrit. Try it. It's really helpful, you know, to do it for preaching. Because, you know, these things are important. So try it. Just pair up and say, I say that everything is one. Okay, and see what the brahmachari next to you says, or the brahmacharini next to you. So I say it's all one. Okay? Anyway, so they called in Vedanta Deshika, who was a Sri Vaishnava, and he was the referee in the debate. So Vedanta Deshika comes from Kanchipuram. So Advaita Acharya visited this Kanchipuram. And then he went to Udupi. What's going on here? I thought Advaita Acharya was a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ah, I thought he was a Gaudiya Vaishnava. Well, hang on a minute. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has not been born yet. So how can he be a Gaudiya Vaishnava? So he goes to Udupi. Who does he meet in Udupi? He meets Madhavendra Puri. And there he begins the process of taking initiation. Then he went up to Dandakaranya forest, the place of the exile of Ram. He went to Nasik, where Sopranak's nose was cut off. And he went to Dwarka, place where Krishna lived for many, 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 many years. He went to Prabhash Kshetra, the place where the Yadu dynasty vanquished each other. And they all disappeared. Then he went to Pushkar, the only place where Lord Brahma is worshipped. Then he went to Kurukshetra, place of the Battle of Kurukshetra, obviously. And then he went up to Badrinath, even as far as Gandaki. Then he came all the way down to Mithila, and he was very happy there to see the birthplace of Sita Devi. And then it is said, that he met the poet Vidyapati at that time. Then he went to Ayodhya, birthplace of Ram. Then he came all the way to Varanasi. Then he came to Prayag, where the three rivers meet. You see? The Triveni. And it is said at that point that he shaved his head. He went to Mathura and visited the house of Kubja, among other things. Then he did the around the Mathura barefoot walk. I thoroughly recommend this to you. Who has done it? Gone all the way around Mathura, barefoot. Who's done the Braj Mandal Parikram? 128 miles. You have what? You worn with shoes. You have done with shoes. I forgive you. Because if you don't wear shoes, actually it's just torture. It really is torture. But being a fanatical young brahmachari, yes I was, bright orange, I dispensed with shoes for the entire month and walked 128 miles around Braj. So this is the walking in the footsteps of Advaita, because you go to each pastime place of Krishna. So where Krishna danced upon the heads of Kaliya, you go there. Now, of course, he went to Janmastan, the place of Krishna's birth, which, had it been destroyed by that time? I think it had been destroyed by that time by the Mughals. They'd come in and they had destroyed Ayodhya. They had destroyed Mathura and countless other places, actually. Conquest through architecture. That was the idea of the Mughals. We shall destroy temples and use the very same stones to build the mosque. Then we shall smash the deities. And when we've smashed the deities into pieces, we shall use the pieces of the deities underneath the steps of the mosque. So anyone who's walking up the hill to the mosque will be standing on the head of the Hindu deities. Very nice, isn't it? This consciousness does not disappear just because it happened in medieval times. There are people just waiting to do that today. That is why our argumentation skills must be very developed, you see. Because we don't conquest through the sword. We have a tongue like a sword. Brahmins have, what does it say? Mahabharata says that we have the Kshatriya. He has a tongue like butter, but a heart like a razor blade. And the Brahmins have a tongue like a razor blade, but a heart like a sword. No. Heart like butter, that's right. Okay, so watch out with Brahmins. Watch out. Okay. They may seem nice people, vegetarians, okay? They wouldn't hurt a fly. But you get into an argument with them, and they'll slice you, chop you, dice you, splice you. Okay, it should be like that. It is said that one of the followers of Tirumangai Alwar was so expert at argument, you know, that just you could stand with him just for a few seconds, and just by standing with him for a few seconds, you'd be immediately frustrated in argument. He knew how to pick an argument. It's like the old, you know, Monty Python sketch. You know, man goes into a room, and he says, "I've come in for an argument." And the man says, "No, you haven't." He says, "Yes, I have." "No, you haven't." "Yes, I have." "No, you haven't." "Yes, I have." He said, and he rings a bell and he says, "That's the end of the argument." He said, "That wasn't an argument. That was simply a series of contradictions." He said, "No." He said, "I think you'll find that a series of contradictions is in fact an argument." He said, "But it's not fair." "Yes, it is." "No, it isn't." Then he said, "I'm sorry, I'm not going to argue anymore. Your time is up." Silly. Anyway, it's very frustrating. It's like a person who is a very good arguer can often seem right because you lose yourself in the argument. Like one of our Ritvik champions, expert at arguing. And you think, when you're speaking to him, you think, "I must be wrong because he's a good arguer." No, you're not wrong. You're right. It's just that you're not a very good arguer. They're good arguers. but they're completely and utterly wrong. So understand, there's a difference between being able to argue convincingly and being right. You can argue convincingly and win the debate, but you're wrong. The two things are there. So he did the prakram of Vajraja, and then he went to, I'm conscious of the time here. You can still go to this place. Oh. There's a place known as Dwadashaditya Tila. Tila means hill, Dwadashaditya means the 12 sons, 12 Adityas. It is said that when Krishna danced on the head of Kaliya, he went to a nearby, he went to the bank of the river, and it was a hilly section, and he lay on the grass of the hill, and the sun came out burning 12 times brighter to dry up Krishna's clothes, because he caught a little bit of a chill, because he'd been in the water for so long, so the sun dried him out. So that Dwadashaditya Tila, that is the place of the foot of that hill was where Advaita Acharya lived for some time. You can still go to the foot of that hill, not on the Yamuna side, but on the other side, on the street side. You're coming down from Dwadashaditya Tila, where now Sanatan Goswami's Madan Mohan temple is, and you're going on the way to Banki Bihari. So you go down, and on the corner there's Advaita Vat, and that's the place where Advaita Acharya lived. If you're doing the temples of Vrindavan, that's a very nice place to go. So what happened there? He had a dream that the deity, the former deity of that place, came to him and said, the Mughals came, and my servants took me, and they buried me in a place where the Mughals would never find them, never find me. And that's not just buried under the ground, but buried under the river. So go there and dig me up. So he went there into the river Yamuna, which at that time was flowing past the hill, and he took Krishna. And later on, the Mughals came again, and the deity hid himself in a pile of Mahaprasadam flowers. So then there was another dream. Advaita had another dream. Give me to such and such a Brahmin. His name was Purushottam Chob. And this Purushottam Chob, later on, this deity was being worshipped in the family, and then he had a dream that you should give me to this person known as Sanatan. So then he was given to Sanatan, and you all know the story. Sanatan, and worshipping his deity, wanted chapatis or wanted salt, and he said no. He said you'll just have to make do with what I have. So then a beautiful temple was built in that place, and you can still go to that temple. Unfortunately, again for the third time, the deity had to be taken, and this time taken to Jayapur, where the whole another set of leelas was there. So as they were a few years ago, as they were redoing Sanatan Goswami's temple, a chunk fell off of the original temple. And I just happened to sort of know somebody who happened to be very, helpful to me. So I have a chunk of that original Sanatan temple in my house. And this is going out on internet all over the world. And I was going to bring that here to show you, but I just forgot at the last minute. So, it is said that Madhavendrapuri advised Advaita to marry, so that sometimes, marriage is a funny thing. Sometimes we, when I was young, I thought marriage is what you do because, you absolutely have a need to, and it's a very selfish thing, and therefore you should be, a little bit guilty of your selfishness. But sometimes marriage can be selfless in order to create a family tree that will care for the deity. So Madhavendrapuri, apparently, this is his explanation. So at aged 50, Advaita married Sita Devi. And the next thing we hear about, the next thing I want to tell you with the time available, is that before he finally got married, Advaita met Haridas Thakur. And he also gave initiation to Vasudev Datta, Bhagavatacharya Shamdas, and Yadunandan Acharya, who was the guru of Raghunath Das Goswami. So then we don't hear of Advaita Acharya, who's living in Shantipur, until Lord Chaitanya is already born. But it is said, and I don't know by who, but it is said that Advaita and Haridas Thakur used to preach Sankirtan before the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, we don't know whether that's true or we don't know, because there's, you know, our Krishna consciousness movement in the West is coming up to about a million people involved. That's a conservative estimate, or it may be a generous estimate. We don't care. We don't know and we don't care, because I said to the GBC, I said, we should have a ministry of statistics, because the Jehovah's Witnesses do. If you go to the Jehovah's Witnesses, they know exactly how many members, how many books they've distributed. We know exactly how many books we've distributed all the way back to 1971, but we don't know how many people we've got. Surely that means that we value book distribution more than people who are Krishna conscious. And I said, yes, you could reason that. I said, well, surely we should have a department that registers A, initiated people, and B, people who are actually following. So they said, well, yeah, that would be difficult. Just people who are members. But we don't have a membership. No one knows if they're a member or not. Shruti Dharma, are you officially a member of ISKCON? You signed somewhere, yeah. Am I a member of ISKCON? I don't know. No one's ever told me that I'm a member of ISKCON. I'm initiated, but you can be initiated without being a member of ISKCON. Or you can be a life member of ISKCON without being initiated. But we have no scheme that says how many members we have, so we don't count them. Maybe it's because we don't care. But I think we should care. Because if we don't care, there are other organizations. You know, just like Ryanair now, as far as I'm concerned, is in a position where, because they don't care, yeah, Ryanair don't care, that other people are going to start going somewhere else, regardless of the price. Because they just treat you so badly, and they deserve to lose members. They deserve to lose customers. I'm sorry, taking up the class for my pet peeves. But, you know, people who don't care about you deserve to lose members. That's my point. So either ISKCON cares about its members, and the first thing that you do to care for your members is at least count them, please. So I was told, Kripa Moya, if you care so much about membership, you better start a GBC ministry. So together with someone else, I'm now supposed to be the ministry of ISKCON statistics. You know, who said there was unemployment in this country? You can get a job with ISKCON anywhere. They won't pay you anything. And you'll starve. But you can have a ministry. We'll give you an entire ministry. The ministry of starving Brahmins. So, all I want to say is that there is a bigger Krishna consciousness movement than ISKCON. Are you shocked to hear that? There's a much, much bigger movement than ISKCON. And it is the movement of Advaita Acharya. But nobody speaks English. They only speak Bengali. But there are, literally, if you put all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas who don't speak English together in Bengal and Bangladesh and all of those, you get a movement that's 5, 6, 7 times bigger than ISKCON. Huge. It's just, they may not preach, they may not travel, and they may not print, but they're there. And this young gentleman, you came across lots of devotees, didn't you? Lots of devotees. And because Advaita Acharya had 6 sons, Now, three of them he rejected. We're winding it forward here because of the time. Advaitacharya had six sons. Three of them he rejected because they didn't follow the path of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Three of them he accepted because they did. The three that he rejected, two of them took sannyas. So they were sannyasis. It's not that, Advaitacharya had three mundane kids and three spiritual kids. Okay? It wasn't like that. Two of the kids that he rejected were sannyasis, but they didn't take to the path of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he had two householder children. And today you can meet the great grandchildren of Advaitacharya. You know, and you're not quite sure what to do when you meet them. Do you fall flat on the, you know, your great grandfather was Mahavishnu? You don't know whether to tremble and quake in fear and pass stool and urine on the floor, or to sort of say, are you a patron of Bhaktivedanta Manor? You could actually sign on here. Prabhupada was not always so complimentary. Prabhupada's distinction was, are they following? You may be the great-great-great-great-great-grandson of Advaitacharya or Virachandra, you know, the son of Nityananda Prabhu, but are you following? And that's it. It's quite, you see. So these sons of the 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 sons, they, sometimes they're kula gurus, and they give initiation. They give initiation. Because there are various systems for taking initiation, you see. So sometimes, if you're in that, you're in the village or in the vicinity, you take initiation from someone who's the son of 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 Advaitacharya. I mean, why not? You know, your guru's guru was Mahavishnu. That seems like a pretty good sampradaya to belong to, isn't it? But sometimes, Prabhupada in his purports, he says that if they're not following, they're asara. They're useless. And also, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was not very complimentary. And some of them, of course, had formed themselves into groups at Radhakund, who deliberately went on the attack. They were like the Rottweilers of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. And the tender lotus feet of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati were their target. You know, and they tried to arrange for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to be killed. They tried to arrange for, well, they did arrange for the Parikram party to be showered by stones and bricks, so much so that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had to run away, change clothes with a Grihastha disciple who looked like him. Okay, and they had to flee. Later on, after the disappearance, about 1937-38, there was a whole intrigue where the leading disciple, someone who everybody thought was the person who was going to take over the Gaudiya Math or be the first Acharya, indeed was the first Acharya, he left and he wrote a book against Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati called the Gaudiya Trishul, the Gaudiya Trident, three arguments to disestablish the authenticity of the Gaudiya Math. You see? All based around the Radhakund and the Babajis who live there. So now I see devotees, you know, ISKCON devotees, wearing Radhakund tilak, thinking that it's okay. We don't wear Radhakund tilak. We don't wear grey tilak. We wear Gopichandan tilak, the yellow tilak. Prabhupada said one time when they were at Radhakund, Prabhupada, can we wear this Radhakund tilak? Prabhupada, that is another sampradaya. Now, what many devotees confuse is that sometimes in old pictures with Prabhupada, we have devotees wearing grey tilak. I used to wear grey tilak, but only because we couldn't get anything else, because nobody went to India. So what could we wear? Prabhupada said, you can use another type of clay, or Prabhupada had indicated that tilak was something like, because Prabhupada was a pharmacist, you see. So there's a type of clay that you use for abdominal complaints called fuller's earth, and it's pulverized and then dried and then powdered, and you can buy it in Boots the Chemist. So you buy a big tube like that, and you can pour some powder in your hands, and you can mix it into clay. It's a light gray clay. So all the Sankirtan devotees used to be using this fuller's earth, so we all had gray tilak. So in some of the old pictures, that became sort of standard in ISKCON. If you hadn't gone to India, you could wear fuller's earth, because Prabhupada said that tilak is something like fuller's earth. Which didn't make it okay to wear, but Prabhupada seemed to, you know, gloss over it. And then there came a certain point where he said, no, this is from another sampradaya. So the point is, we have to be very clear, these sectarian issues. We have devotees now in, we have 50 devotees. ISKCON has lost 50 devotees from Russia who have gone to live at Radhakund and take shelter of Anantadas Babaji. They left ISKCON. Then we have another 150 who left from Delhi. You know, and this is, and when you're in Radhakund, you will hear that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati is unbona fide. So these are the descendants of the descendants of those who threw stones at our founding grandfather. So we have to be very, very clear who we're following. We're following Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We're following Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. We're following A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we have to know what they said about different things. Otherwise, it's just very, very easy to go to Vrindavan, listen to someone who's got the same tilak as me, but slightly different color. But anyway, he's telling lovely stories about Krishna. And why don't we go to Radhakund? I never went to Radhakund until I was 30. I joined the movement when I was 17. I never went to Radhakund. Why? Because Prabhupada said, don't go to Radhakund. Don't go to Radhakund. And he went even so far as to say, those who go to Radhakund will go to Narakund. Narakund means the lake of hell. So what a thing for a Gaudiya spiritual master to say. Those who go to Radhakund will go to hell. You see? Because unless you're qualified, you'll come away not with Krishna consciousness, but with Krishna unconsciousness. You lose the qualifications that you have. So why was Prabhupada so fastidiously careful about this? And now devotees go to India and they buy Radhakund tilak and it's very nice. It's 24-hour kirtan. We put on Radhakund tilak. It's a trend, just like stripes on your dhoti or wooden shoes, or all the different trends that ISKCON has that do the circuit. And then, please don't do it. Let's just stay faithful to our. We have a tradition. Okay, you don't have to be different. Okay. Your individuality comes, it will manifest itself. Your kirtan may be the same shape. Your dhoti may be the same color. Same boring. I mean, look at me. For 30 years I've been wearing white. How boring is that? I'd love to wear colors of something, at least something in the sort of yellows, maybe. Could I get away with yellows, Sutama? But the thing is that we don't invent. We don't invent. At least we try not to invent. So when something happens, we should think, is this okay? Is this authentic? Is this bona fide? Is this the book I'm reading? The tilak I'm wearing? Okay. So this is Advaita Acharya, who came to, of course, the greatest contribution of Advaita Acharya that Prabhupada tells us is that he invited the Lord to appear in his capacity as Sankarshan. He invites the Lord to appear. And this is one of the reasons that Krishnadas Kaviraj describes for the Lord's descent in the age of Kali. What is the Sanskrit, Shruti? You know the Sanskrit? For one who cannot refuse the request of his devotee. Cannot think of it. But that's the description of Krishna. One who cannot refuse the request of his devotee. Sorry. my head is empty. But he cannot refuse Advaita Acharya's request. So when Advaita worshipped him, it is said that he was worshipping, at least according to their, he was worshipping a Narasimha Shalagram, that you can go to Shantipur and you can still see. Shantipur, you can still go there. And of course our ISKCON goes to Shantipur, and there's a great festival in Shantipur, and thousands of people are fed prasadam. Great festival. But you can see the Shalagram that Advaita Acharya was worshipping at the time. And he worshipped with Ganga Jal and Tulsi Patram. And the Lord appeared. And the Lord appeared. And of course, then there is the great celebration. He appeared. But Advaita Acharya doesn't come for the childhood pastimes. He's in Shantipur. He comes when the Mahaprakash. He hears about them. He's over in Shantipur and he hears about the Mahaprakash. He hears about the Mahaprakash. You see, because all the time, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was manifesting the pastime of an arrogant young student. And even though Advaita Acharya used to have kirtan, Lord Chaitanya would not be interested. You see. And this is all pastimes for the age of Kali, showing that those who sometimes argue against the followers of kirtan will become those who follow. Sometimes our greatest critics become our greatest followers. There was one devotee, one sannyasi in ISKCON. He started his life by throwing beer bottles out of a tall building at the devotees who were building a Rathkar. He was just throwing the beer bottles and seeing how if he could hit any of the devotees. And this is the way he began his spiritual life. Another devotee began his spiritual life. He used to wear airwear boots, you know, bhava boots, and he used to come on Oxford Street, and when he heard the sound of the kirtan, he would follow on the kirtan and make a mockery of the devotees, and then the last devotees, male or female, used to kick them with his boots. And then something happened in his life, and he became a devotee, and is still a devotee. So the thing is that sometimes our critics become our greatest. So even that is displayed as part of the Kali Yuga pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was a critic of the Sankirtan, and then he went to Gaya and came back as the greatest advocate, greatest exponent of Sankirtan, which Advaita Acharya was very happy to see. So Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaura Bhaktivinoda, Sya Dvaita Prabhu Ki Jai. And it's not even Advaita Acharya's appearance day. Hare Krishna.